morning. I'm going to call the first meeting of this session of the Senate Health and Human Services Committee to order. We do not have all members here yet, but we do have a quorum. So I thought we should, out of respect for the commissioner and for others who are here, that we would get started. I do want to call attention to members of our committee, as well as members of the public who are here, that the Commerce Committee in the Senate typically meets at this hour in another room, and they did not have a meeting scheduled today. So I spoke with Chairman Gerlach and just said that we were going to have a presentation on the Health Insurance Exchange Task Force, and wanted to extend the invitation to members of the Commerce Committee if they wish to join us and to participate. And so we are going to, I don't know if it's a rule or not, but we're going to allow members of the Commerce Committee, if they want to ask questions, we'll certainly permit that. Treat it like your own committee and seek recognition from the chair, and we'll answer questions. I do also want to welcome Senator Jeff Hayden, who is new to our committee, and thank you for being here this morning, and we welcome you to the committee. Glad you're here. I don't see Senator Lori yet, but he is now the DFL lead on the HHS committee, replacing Senator Berglund, who has departed for bigger and better things. And I also want to recognize Senator Eaton from the Commerce Committee, and welcome to the Senate and welcome to our committee. And at this point, members, we have only one thing on our agenda today. We wanted to have an opportunity for the administration to present to the Senate information about the work of the task force that has been in place for several months, going back to last year, to get some information update. Where are we? Sort of out of the blue, fortuitously, we received a report, a preliminary report, through Governor Dayton's office, actually yesterday, that is their initial recommendation. So I guess this is an opportune time to have a update from the commissioner on what the exchange task force has been doing, since they've at a point where they've actually issued some recommendations. So at this time, I'd like to welcome Commissioner Rothman, who's the Commissioner of Commerce, to our committee, and I will turn it over to you. I know you have a presentation, and I would ask members to maybe hold off on questions till we give the commissioner an opportunity to present his material, and then we will certainly open it up for questions. But welcome, Commissioner Rothman, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of both committees. It's a distinct honor having both here at the same time, and a unique privilege for me. What we have presented, what we have in front of you, if you would take a look at it, it's the January 31 slides that give you an outline overview of the task force, the advisory task force for the health exchange. And I'll use this to walk us through the beginning, the creation, what it did, and the recommendations that came out and were issued yesterday. So first off, we have just a little background. The Exchange Task Force was created under Minnesota Statute Section 15.014, allowed the Department of Commerce under the administration to establish task force, which gives us 15 members through the Secretary of State's open appointment process for two-year terms and working groups. The initial publication of the press was that we would encourage all members and stakeholders to apply. We were overwhelmed with responses from a number of stakeholders, business community, consumers, healthcare providers, the insurance plans, and a number of other stakeholders interested in being participants in the exchange, as well as legislators who wanted to participate on the exchange task force. We had initially thought that for the task force, we would have the commissioners as members. However, we changed that because we had an overwhelming response and decided that to increase the participation of the stakeholders and the legislators, that we would have the commissioners as only ex officio members. There were discussions with the legislature, with the majority leadership, in terms of offering voting membership to all four of the caucuses. That was done, and communication was made back to us. And once we had heard that certain legislators were interested and others not, we went forward with filling the slate of the legislative panel as well as the stakeholders. We announced at the end of October that the task force membership, what it would be and what we were going to do and the work plan. The task force was set up to, if you turn to page 3, to advise on the following items. These are very broad categories. The size of the small employer market, merger of the individual and small group markets, provisions to avoid adverse selection, risk adjustment, regulatory simplification, cost, quality, satisfaction rating for insurers, and health benefit plans. The Navigator program provisions, long-term governance, and ongoing funding mechanisms. If you look at the next slide, once we got started, we realized that since there were only 15 members that were actual voting members, one way to increase participation of citizens was to establish and build out our working groups. The work groups were then published, and over 100 applicants sought positions on these working groups. We have, again, a broad spectrum of stakeholders, consumers, employers represented, labor, healthcare providers, health insurers, Medicaid, agents and brokers, and those with experience navigating health plan enrollment, experts in public and private health care markets, and legislators. If you then turn to page 5, we have, here's a list of the membership.
Mr. Chairman, are there any more copies of the PowerPoint?
Senator Pappas, I believe there are. If not, we can get some made. I don't know, if Commissioner, I think you furnished the committee with a number. I'm not sure what the precise number. We'll get copies made.
And
we're sharing.
We'll get some copies made. Or do we have copies? They're there.
Okay. Here's one, too.
Thank you. I apologize. I thought we had a stack of them over there, but appreciate it. Commissioner Rothman, please continue.
I think it's helpful to point out who the membership is. And again, as I had thanked them, I want to publicly thank them for their time and their hard work and diligence in working on the task force projects. We had Sue Abderholden, who's the executive director of the Minnesota Alliance on Mental Illness, Alfred Babington Johnson, the CEO of Stairstep Foundation, Danette Coleman, the Vice President, General Manager of Individual and Family Business at Medica, Philip Cryan, the Health Policy Specialist and Organizing Director for SEIU, Mary Ford, an attorney and the former General Counsel of Allina, Dori Gabolo, CEO and Executive Director, Board Member of Open Cities Health Center, Bob Hanlon, Founder and President of Corporate Health Systems, an agent and broker, Roger Cathall, owner of Cartesian Solutions, Inc., Phil Norgard, Director of Human Services for the Fond du Lac Indian Tribe, Stephanie Radke, Deputy Director for Community Service of the Community Service Division of Dakota County, Dan Schmidt, Vice President, Great River Office Products, representing the Chamber of Commerce of Minnesota. Then we also had Senator Ann Rest, Senator Tony Laurie, Representative Joe Atkins, Representative Tom Huntley, and then again, ex-official members, Commissioner Jessen, Commissioner Ellinger, and myself, serving as chair of the task force to make sure we were on task to get things done. I had mentioned earlier the 10 technical work groups that we had dropped down under the task force. These are on page 6. We focused out of the gate on several of the more important in terms of time and chronological consideration We also have work underway in terms of sort of technical matters with respect to some of the others. But the four work groups started in November and met in December and reported back to our task force as we proceeded, twice in November, twice in December, and three times in January. The four work groups that were started out of the gates were the adverse selection and encouraging market competition and value, navigators and agents and brokers, governance, and the finance work groups. The remainder of these other work groups are getting up and running right now. We have solicited input for the public to offer to be on these work groups. These are the tribal consultation, the IT and operations work group, the individual eligibility work group, small employers and employees work group, measurement and reporting work group, outreach, communications, and marketing. All of these work groups will report to the task force, the 15 members we had indicated before, in providing advice in terms of recommendations. Turning to page 7, this goes into a little more detail about the schedule that we had for the meetings at the task force. We first met on Tuesday, November 8th. We talked about the charge and process and structure of the task force. We had an initial exchange overview presentation by staff and discussed key exchange issues, mostly to sort of decide which of the work groups I'd already talked about were the most important to start with. On the 17th of November, we had an impressive and quite detailed presentation by actuaries who modeled Minnesota's health economy in terms of the exchange, individual and small markets. They did an economic and actuarial analysis in cooperation with the health plans in terms of gathering the data necessary to run those numbers, and then as well with MCHA, in order to all the data out there that goes into understanding the economy of the health marketplace. We had a discussion of the recommendations and deliverable timetable, and then focused on what we would do for the work groups, which comes up in the next meetings. On December 7th, we had a report of the adverse selection group and the IT prototypes, and we received public feedback. On Wednesday, December 21st, our meeting focused on the next work groups, reports, and presentations. At this point, we had pros and cons. They'd laid out the issues and some of the things that they were thinking about and considering in terms of what were the important items for them to be looking at the beginning. So we had a presentation from our navigators and agents and brokers work group. We also had a presentation from the long-term governance work group and the financing work group. The next two task force meetings occurred on January 10th and the 17th. We had the task force discussions and recommendations on adverse selection, financing, governance, and navigators. These were the actual draft recommendations in terms of what was being contemplated. We then had on January 17th a very important and exceptional discussion about health disparities broadly in Minnesota, and things or interests and issues that the exchange could be thinking about as it builds out. For example, what the uninsured pool, uninsured Minnesotans look like, how diverse communities can best benefit by some of the opportunities to have insurance and all that. Then on Wednesday, January 18th, which is on page 9, the task force met a few days ago, 2 weeks ago approximately, and had a discussion and voted on the recommendations for the four major categories of topics, including adverse selection, financing, governance, navigators, and agents and brokers. We distributed and we gave out copies of, and these are up on our website as well, the Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange Advisory Task Force recommendations. This is this document here. It's dated January 18th put out publicly yesterday so that everybody can take a look at them. Those recommendations go into a variety of detail. In the report, as you'll see, we outlined our schedule. We also outlined what each work group identified as initial issues for consideration and the recommendations within those issues, spelled out in at a relatively high level, but hopefully with sufficient detail to guide anybody looking at the exchange for Minnesota and what the task force strove to do, which was to achieve consensus at the task force, not only within the work groups, among all the stakeholders, including the consumers and the business groups, the health plans, the providers, all of those folks, in terms of their views and on the major issues and recommendations. The task force plans to continue to meet. Again, as I'd indicated, it was and is a 2-year appointment process. That group is set up to advise as needed and as we go along in terms of the further work group projects and work that has to be done, as well as offering technical assistance to the task force as we proceed. And I do have to, again, thank all of the technical experts. It's a phenomenal group of folks. I recognize a lot of them are here. They're here behind me and have been following our task force meetings. Those meetings, again, were public. We've had them open and available for anybody to come and talk to us. At every meeting, we had public opportunity for people to come in and comment, give us any feedback on anything that we were working on at the time, and we integrated that into some of our thoughts and commentary. With that, Mr. Chair, the recommendations are there. I'm happy to go through any questions and talk about anything else with respect to the task force recommendations.
Thank you, Commissioner, and we'll solicit questions. And members, I hope if you do not have, members of the Commerce Committee, if you do not have copies of the recommendation document, please raise your hand. We'll get copies to you, but I think they're available. Senator Cruz needs a copy. Anybody else?
Did they pass it today?
Yes. Need a few of them? 3 or 4? Okay, we'll get copies here. Commissioner Rothman, before we do that, I did have one question for you that I hope you can provide some clarity. Yesterday when Governor Dayton had his press conference and talking about the recommendations and according to a report on that, Pioneer Press, he is not quoted but paraphrased that he says that the administration probably lacks authority to implement health exchange in Minnesota unless a bill on the subject is passed by the legislature. There's also a report from NPR that quotes you today as saying that there's nothing in the federal law that requires states to pass legislation. And so it seems like there's a difference of view between you and the governor on whether or not a bill needs to be constructed and passed by the legislature in order to facilitate the health care exchange. And I just was hoping that you could clarify and present us with one answer from the perspective of the administration on what the view is, whether or not legislation is needed, and if not, why not?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The paraphrase out of the paper that you mentioned, I believe, is a paraphrase. It's not precisely what the governor said. But that said, the comment that I made to NPR, I guess it was a couple of weeks ago now, but it came out in the story today, are consistent. I think that what you need to do is step back and think of the full context of where we are. We know that the legislature introduced a couple of bills last session, and you yourself have said that you're considering options and all of that. We welcome from the administration the opportunity to consult with you, to work with you, and to work cooperatively with anybody who's working on legislation this session. I think the first thing to consider when you're responding to your question is the fact that under Executive Order 1130, the governor set up and instructed the Department of Commerce to design and develop Minnesota Made Exchange in coordination with the Departments of Human Services and the Department of Health. Second of all, the Department of Commerce put in a budget request for the receipt and spending of federal grant funds under the exchange program. Our request included the request to design and implement an exchange for Minnesota. I did a presentation in front of the Commerce Committee with respect to the budget. Went through the process, and we have the authority that enables us to plan and design, however you want to phrase that, Mr. Chair, implement the exchange for Minnesota. That enables us to make sure that, like all other states, Minnesota meets the deadline of January 1, 2013, which is a significant date for all of us. It's less than now 11 months away. It means that we have to really do double time to meet the deadline, but the deadline is to for each state, including Minnesota, to prove that it operationally can implement an exchange. In the event that states do not, the federal government will and has indicated that by law they'll do that. Again, I say this, we've talked at panels together. Most importantly, it's for all of us to think about what it makes sense for Minnesota in terms of an exchange. There is uncertainty about what the lack of legislation means in terms of the recommendations of the task force. If you look at the whole, the panoply, the full set that includes the adverse selection, the navigators and brokers, finance and governance, the task force recommendations looked at a broader set of what they believe are general principles that should guide the development of an exchange for Minnesota. And I think you have to contrast that with the minimum authority, the minimum requirement that the federal government would set in terms of working with the states to meet that January 1, 2013 deadline. So in the context of that, there is uncertainty about what the lack of legislation would mean in terms of establishing an exchange to fully implement the full set of recommendations of the task force and the requirements of the federal government. If necessary, looking at what legal determination needs to be made would be done carefully. We would also probably consult with the Attorney General on that. And again, as I started off, Mr. Chair, we would much prefer, however, to develop the legislation in cooperation with this committee, with yourself, with the chairs of each of the committees for the legislation pathway, both in the House and the Senate, and the leadership in both chambers, so that we can team together and work out what is best for Minnesota. We have a huge opportunity to do that, and I think this is the time where we really, I should say this too, Mr. Chair. From now until the end of session, I'll make myself, our staff, available to you, to the committee members, to any of the committees in the legislature to work on the details so that we can get the job done. And as a task force saw when I worked on this, I'm committed to doing whatever it takes for all of us to build a Minnesota-made exchange.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I appreciate the nuance of your answer, but for the sake of my own understanding and clarity, I'll try to interpret your comments to suggest, and you can correct me, that it is the view of you and the administration that no legislation is required, but you'd be happy to work with us or to have some legislation, but it's not absolutely necessary in your view, although there's a certain amount of uncertainty about that. Is that fair to characterize your response in that way?
I think that that's fair. I think just to make sure that, you know, the nuance is appreciated. It's a collaborative effort between what's required under the minimum requirement under what the federal government will approve or not. I think that is a dialogue with the federal government and what we have to certify in terms of what's in place by January 1, 2013. I think that, there's some uncertainty as to that. I do believe that other states that are looking at this issue, for example, have looked at the legislative approach. There are a couple that are going by executive order instead. I think those are Indiana and as well Rhode Island are the best examples. So that what we need to have in place for the federal government to certify an exchange for Minnesota, again, is something that once we work on, I suppose, the legislation and all that, if we have to get down to the nitty-gritty and what we need to accomplish to get our exchange certified, we'll look at that and very carefully.
Commissioner, thank you for that clarification. I guess my follow-up to your comments would be, and I have read through the recommendations that were produced by your committee and made available yesterday, and as in many documents of this sort, they are general in nature. They have varying degrees of specificity, but as we have discovered in the course of work in this committee and other committees in the legislature, that there's a lot of mischief in language that, if it isn't clear, can yield a number of interpretations. And part of what happens in the course of writing laws is to try to clarify to make sure there is as little ambiguity as possible about what is meant and what the law requires and doesn't require and so forth. And so my question is, given the recommendations that have been produced and some of the comments I believe that were made at the press conference yesterday, is it the intent of the administration to produce a bill that would reflect these recommendations that would be brought to the legislature in a time that we might act on it or review it or have hearings on it? Is that part of the intention of what this task force's work is to do, is to work and develop materials that would be translated into a actual bill? Is that, could you answer that for us?
Absolutely. Again, as I indicated, the administration prefers to work cooperatively with the legislature to find, I suppose, as you indicated, where at a 30,000-foot level these task force recommendations are, other thoughts that are out there, and where does that work itself out in the legislative process and working with you all. The task force, I think the place to start is a task force considered that what these recommendations would do were set sort of principles for any legislation to consider and to implement. From that point, because we know this, that there are at least two bills introduced in the legislature last spring, we've heard that others are interested in introducing legislation. I think both Senator Lori and Representative Atkins are interested in the legislative. Where we're at is that we would look at all of this, the legislative proposals, and as I indicated, work with everybody, yourself, the committee, the folks in both committees, actually, and in the House and in the the legislature overall to try to fashion what would be the best solution. And I believe Senator Lori and Representative Atkins had indicated they would look at these recommendations and I think see whatever they decide would be legislatively appropriate. I believe that's to be determined, and I think we're just, again, open to working on legislation and working with you on it.
And Commissioner, thank you. I guess I just want to be clear. So it's not the intent for the administration to propose a bill, but is anticipating that there might be a number of bills that would be introduced by various legislators, and as those bills are introduced, that you might want to have dialogue or comment or so forth on those bills, but there will not be a administration bill on an exchange. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yes, the administration's view is that these are consensus recommendations, that the legislation that folks are talking about and drafting up should consider all of these things, that we believe that these are terrific recommendations and guidance for all of us, for all the legislative opportunities, and that we will work with everybody to work it out.
Thank you, Commissioner. I know we've got a couple of questions from members, and before we do that, just one last question I'd like you to respond to, if you could. There's been reports of under the authority that the task force was created and using, I presume, funds that were provided by the federal laws that allowed for states to use planning dollars and so forth, but there have been reports of staff that have been hired, and I guess I think it would be important for the committee to understand how many staff, who they are, what their salaries are, and who's paying the cost. Is this money from the federal government or is it from the state? And if you could provide some clarity on that, I don't know if you're prepared to bring that today, or if not, you can certainly submit it. But, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Under the budget request and the authority received to apply for and spend federal funds, the Department of Commerce administration worked together, submitted an application for that in the summertime. We received federal funding in August. It was $4.2 million. It was the first tranche of the establishment grant level one. And with those funds, the authority is to not only include staff, but also to help look at IT infrastructure issues and as well some of the funding that is necessary to make sure we had a task force up and running. The staff, with that funding, we focused on what technical staff would be necessary regardless of any exchange, focusing on operational issues first out of the gate, IT infrastructure issues. We have nine staff. There is an exchange director, a finance director. We have funding for senior counsel, information project director, measurement and reporting director, public program operations director, commercial operations director, communications and marketing director, a project manager, and office manager. We'll submit this so that you have it and their names. I have them here and their salaries. I believe also, we'll get those precise details to you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Any other information you need?
Appreciate that. Could you just, for purposes of today, nine staff, total salary for the nine staff is approximately?
Off the top of my head, I don't know the answer to that. Right. But I will get you the exact answer.
Thank you. Senator Lori.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did serve on this task force. I want to thank Commissioner Rothman, the taskmaster, for stepping us through this really involved process. I mean, he went through a lot of the schedule that we followed, and we had, you know, really broad participation and really excellent attendance at these working sessions all around the state. And we're talking, you know, four-hour meetings and people really giving significant amounts of their time and talents and energies to building a consensus approach for the Minnesota model to move healthcare forward in Minnesota. And so, you know, we had some discussions how we should approach that. You were asking about whether this was going to lead to legislation or not. And we had discussions about that early on in the task force and decided that as a task force, we really should try to come up with some actionable recommendations. We got them as far as we could with the limited time that we had, a couple of months of intense work. And we have what amount to, again, fairly consensus items. You know, I think everyone on the task force is comfortable with where we got to, but didn't win every battle that they thought should be incorporated in here, myself included. You know, it is my intent to work with the technical support of the three agencies that were present at each of the task force members to put together legislation that stays true to the principles laid out in the recommendations and bring it to the legislature, but understanding that they are a broad set of recommendations. I mean, I'm in all good faith asking for help. There's a wide range. You're right. There's a wide range of policy items that could go in this bill and still stay very true to the recommendations from this task force. And I really hope that we can engage together in building a Minnesota model. It is the history that we have in Minnesota of sitting down and working together and doing what's right for our people. And, you know, I think that the engagement of this group is really reflective of that tradition in our state. We had businesses, we had labor, we had many consumer, you know, advocates for consumer groups, for mental health, you know, and we had industry and we had the plans, you know, and a handful of legislators. And I really do hope that we can engage. And I will say, too, you know, it was 4 DFL legislators on this. We initially appointed 2 and held positions open. I would really, but this task force is going to go on for a couple of years, and I would publicly reach out and ask that that the Republicans step forward and come continue work on this work group and try to find somebody who can come and sit and engage with this broad coalition of Minnesotans coming together trying to do what's right for our people. I mean, we can either probably add membership to the task force or you know, one of us from each body would probably trade with the 2 Republican members that are on the other task force, something like that. I mean, we really need to sit down and work together on these really complicated and perplexing issues and prevent the needing to get to the point where we find out what is the executive power if the legislature doesn't act. That's a backup plan if the legislature fails. I hope we never get there. I hope that we can sit down and work together. I think that, you know, with the consensus that we've begun building already, there's a great opportunity for us to do well by our people if we can sit down together. And I honestly hope that we can get to that point. And I applaud Commissioner Rothman for stepping us through this really long, involved work through the task force, and I thank the entire task force for, again, their time and dedication and efforts to what I believe is a really good set of recommendations.
Thank you. And Chairman Gerlach, I don't know if you have particular questions you'd like to raise at this point, or... Senator Brown?
You want to jump in?
Oh, do you want to let Senator Gerlach go ahead?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Rothman. My particular interest area, I'm no expert in the details of all of the technical side of how this is to be, but my concern is about the governance structure. And I know that's one of the task force subgroups that's been working on that. And I've just been digging through my thick file here on the exchange, and I cannot seem to find it. But I thought I remembered that there's certain parameters that the ACA allows for a state, if you're putting this exchange together certain parameters as far as how it will be governed. I mean, how is it a state agency or a nonprofit? And on the recommendations, it doesn't specify which yet. And I'm wondering if you can tell me what direction you think you're going. In the task force recommendations, it says long-term governance, which implies that maybe there's phases or there's a short-term governance and then a long-term. But I'm wondering, I know that the recommendations talks about the issues considered, what governance structure is recommended, should it have a governing body, and what statutes should apply. And it outlines a lot of different attributes that are very familiar to us with other boards, commissions, those sorts of things. But from a larger picture, can you tell me what is being recommended for the larger picture? Where will this be housed? In an agency? As a nonprofit, and some discussion has been about like an MCHA model, something like that. What is the broader model that sure. you're going?
Commissioner Rothman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gerlach, that's a very good question. Starting with where your question started with under the ACA, I think that the ACA contemplates really three or four options that guides everybody in all exchanges throughout the states. One is a state agency. Two is what they call a sort of a quasi-state agency or a public-private partnership model. The third is a nonprofit. And it's contemplated, of course, that if the states do not pick an exchange, that the fourth would be the federal government. So those are the governance options that are out there. The task force work group considered within that framework, a lot of other detailed and characteristics of what a governance model or structure should or should not include, including some guidance from the federal government under the ACA in terms of conflicts of interest. So there's a rule out there basically that says, and it applies to the governance, that they're really, for the majority of the board, when you pick one, there should be no conflicts of interest, but that there certainly is room for how that gets played out in terms of what model a state could choose. So the task force, to put a kind of a high-level overview about what they did, is they talked about whether or not it's a non-governmental entity, a quasi-government, a public-private partnership, or a state agency. Regardless of that, these are the detailed recommendations. I should also say that this work group was made up of phenomenally of legal experts. They came together under Mary Ford, an attorney herself, and looked through all the governance stuff. So we had nonprofits involved. The providers were on this. The plans were on this. And they came through in terms of then what a board should look like. They recommended a 15 to 20 member board, staggered terms, term limited, those kinds of things. Then it also said that for accountability, there should be obviously some checks, including the legislative auditor's jurisdiction, fair and open marketplace, that we make sure that we are compliant with 10A, for example, and that there should be some flexibility in terms of some of the more details about how the board would operate. And those you see on pages 8 and 9 of the work group. And again, that I think the task force took the recommendations and understood that whether or not you pick any of the three or four options, these are principles that should go along with them, and left open that question. In terms of where we go, I think all of us, in terms of where we are, both in the legislature here and the stakeholders, is that it seemed that how we fashion a public-private partnership in all of this is sensible, and how do we get there is something that we would leave to working out in the legislative process and having those kinds of discussions.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, then Commissioner, if I
sorry, good luck.
Has the task force recommended one of those four options yet, or is that still a work in progress?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gerlach, no, the task force did not, and I think intentionally decided to leave that question unanswered by them. And to leave it to everybody else to figure out, you know, if it's going to be legislation, let everybody have that dialogue and conversation. And I should say, to part of your question, preliminarily, just to incubate this thing, I think, you know, under the federal grant authority, we're just trying to get things started. And think of it like this: some of the when you're an architect, you put this stuff together and start building plans and designs, but not all of it is fleshed out at this point.
Mm-hmm. Senator Gerlach, did you have a follow-up?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner. Just lastly, then, is there a process in place for determining this? Will this is legislation required for the governance of this, or choosing which of these options, or is that something that can be decided in the executive branch under the guiding principles you're operating under, or is that who will ultimately make that decision?
Mr. Roth.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gerlach, you know, ultimately the federal government says it's up to the states to decide, up to each state, so it's up to the state of Minnesota to decide that question. A number of states have passed legislation to address it. A couple I know have passed or have executive orders in place. And I think, again, going back to where we are today, it would be to welcome that discussion about legislation. In the event that there's, when we get to the end of the session, where we are and what we have to do, I think we'll take a look at where we are. Right now, we're incubating it, as I indicated, and as a place to start at the Department of Commerce, and we're just sort of open to figuring out what would be the best for all of us.
Thank you, Commissioner. I have Senator Brown, Senator Benson, Senator Lurie with questions. Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Rothman, a health insurance exchange in and of itself can be a positive tool for consumers. My concern comes in with the certification. For us to have an acceptable exchange, we would need to be certified by the federal government. And in that happening, we would need an exchange that is adequate under ACA. I am finding conflicting reports of what is adequate under ACA. I've tried to read through that very large bill, and it's very confusing. Can you provide a list, complete and adequate list of what the requirements are for an exchange in Minnesota? And then also, you use the phrase, we need to do what makes sense for Minnesota. What if some of the federal requirements don't make sense for Minnesota? Is there flexibility there?
Commissioner Rothman.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I believe that, first of all, I don't have a detailed list either in what I've brought today or specifying exactly what that federal government certification is. The federal government, HHS, and specifically has provided some guidance. There's flexibility, I think, most recently in terms of various ways in which you can satisfy the requirements. They've telegraphed flexibility in what that would be. We have an open dialogue with them in terms of those minimum requirements for certification, and we'll work with them, I guess, with respect to where we are on January 1, 2013. So that's, as to that, I believe that we would have to, I'd have to speculate, I guess, in terms of what you have in mind in terms of what you're thinking in terms of what would be a Minnesota options and what wouldn't be, you know, considered by folks to not be in compliance. At this point, what I would say is I believe that there's a real good opportunity and space for all of us to be thinking about what makes sense and best for Minnesota. Go ahead.
Senator Brown.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Rothman. Well, my concern is I don't know what that list of requirements is, Is there some, where do I go? Obviously, if we have a working group, someone knows what that list of requirements is, minimal or not minimal. So not knowing what that list is, I don't know if it's what makes sense for Minnesota. So I just, I'm having great difficulty finding out what is the list of requirements. Where do I go to find that?
And Commissioner Rothman, maybe, I think you indicated before you may not have that in front of you, but I would just ask that you would submit to the committee and perhaps to the Commerce Committee as well. What are the requirements under the federal law that need to be fulfilled to achieve this certification status? And if you could provide that to us, or if you want to have further comments, but I would appreciate if you don't have that right in front of you right now, that you could ask someone to accumulate that those requirements and submit it to the committee. That would be helpful. But Commissioner Rothman.
Mr. Chair and Senator, I have spoken about some of those requirements already today in terms of what are the options for governance. Conflicts of interest will have to be addressed. The federal government will also require that we prove the operability, that we have the technical infrastructure in place operationally to be able to get turn on the lights by within a year after January 1, 2013. And so what that means is you have to have understood and systems in place for eligibility determination, enrollment, what plans will be sold in the exchange, how those certification requirements are, sort of the operational details. But in terms of very specifics, again, they're very high level. They're not. It's not a really detailed list, but we can provide you with sort of what the general parameters are for the states and their flexibility.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Benson and then Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Rothman. I was doing some work on our Minnesota healthcare mandates, and I'm sure your staff talked to you about a meeting that we had, and I found out that, and I'm going to ask you, have you evaluated the healthcare mandates that Minnesota has? Because the default option for the essential benefits set is the largest of the small group plans. And correct to misunderstanding, all of our mandates would be included in that. Have you done a cost-benefit analysis on those mandates before we adopt them permanently into this new structure?
Commissioner Rothman.
Mr. Chair and Senator, let me just answer. It's kind of a little bit lengthy discussion. Just for the benefit of all members, to bring everybody up to speed, you're talking about the essential health benefits set under the federal law. Recently in December, I have a copy of it. You probably do. I think you provided it and we talked about it. They provided guidance in terms of what the states, all states, including Minnesota, need to do in terms of adopting the essential health benefit set. They're calling me to give me the answer to the question.
we'll jot that down and provide it to you.
But if you look at it, it's the guidance itself. It's dated December 16th. It's quite a lengthy document. But what HHS, the federal government, came out with were options for states, again, giving flexibility in terms of four different options. The small employer marketplace, there's also the option to adopt the state plan or the federal plan. And initially, what the administration has done is in a separate task force, not the exchange task force, set up a health reform task force, which has a work group called the Access Work Group. Legislators and representatives from the stakeholders are on that task force. It's met at least two times. Staff of all the agencies are going through what those options look like. We have a detailed chart. We collected data from all the health plans in Minnesota that apply in those categories to determine what would be Minnesota's option. And you're referring to the small group plan. We believe we have to get clarification from the federal government in terms of what their definitions are, and we're in the process of doing that. We also received public comment so that we could ask those kinds of questions and in looking at what those options are. But the parameters are this, that Minnesota has to choose among these options relatively quickly by the third quarter of this year in order to decide what would be the, quote, essential health benefits for Minnesota for 2013 and 2014, so for 2 years out. We just received sort of the information. The task force the work group and the access group received a staff analysis of that. I should also say that Representative Gottwald is on that access work group, I believe, and you're working on a lot of this stuff here as well. But to get to specifically your answer, I think we all have to be thinking about what those options mean for Minnesota and what they are. Now, in terms of a cost-benefit analysis, I think most importantly, when you're talking about Minnesota's benefit set that we have by statute, all plans that are sold in Minnesota are required to have those coverage benefits in them. So that's the answer to your question. So if in fact there are some that are not, I'd actually like to know about it. But one of the options would be to consider what the small group plan looks like, and you know we haven't drilled down into the very specifics as to whether or not the plan that meets that definition has all those mandates in it. But we're pretty confident it should.
And
Senator Benson, do you
Mr. Chair, follow-up? Commissioner Rothman, I wasn't so much concerned about a cost-benefit analysis between our four options, but as to whether those mandates, in fact, had a cost benefit within our healthcare market, to the larger point of, and this may be anecdotal, but it's my understanding that Minnesota has a lot more mandates than other states. And I would like to know before we lock into this higher mandate essential benefit set, that our healthcare costs are not an outlier in the country. We are being put into a federal system where the federal government will reimburse only at a certain rate, will apply rules only in a certain way, and yes, they give us flexibility in some senses, but they're not going to give us flexibility in dollars. And I want to ensure that we're not building in a benefit set that leaves us permanently. And well, you said 2014, I believe it's 2016 before we can review. It leaves us permanently at a payment disadvantage compared to what the federal government will allow compared to North, South Dakota, Illinois. I don't know where we sit in the cost of our health care compared to other states, and we're being put into a very uniform system. And now would be a good time to check our mandate set before we push it into a permanent structure. And that was my cost-benefit analysis question.
Commissioner Rothman, I don't know if there was a question there precisely, but if you wanted to comment, please feel free. If not, we can.
Would you like me to clarify and ask a more direct question? Would that be
either
helpful?
Either way, Mr. Chair. Senator Benson.
Okay. Have you, Commissioner Rothman, compared our health insurance costs in the exchange structure compared to what other states will have in their exchange structure? And will the federal subsidy be sufficient to cover our higher mandate set, or will we face a gap? We, in this state, because we try to do the good thing and the right thing in so many cases in health and human services, we end up with a large gap compared to what the federal government is willing to cover. And we continue to do what is right. But before we take this step forward, we should know what it's going to cost us if we choose to go forward with our current health care mandate set. So please, have you compared us to other states, and are you prepared to document the difference in the federal subsidy and what our health care rates might be?
Mr. Rothman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Benson, as to a specific analysis and cost benefit that you're talking about, no. But I think it's important to step back and think about this in terms of what it means for the marketplace and what and to get to some of the part of the to get to frame your the answer to your question. The essential health benefits set is it will be applicable to the entire marketplace, not just the exchange. So the exchange work involves that, and so, for example, if any plan is sold, it would in through the exchange, you would have to meet the essential health benefits set mandate requirement, and that would apply to the market. To digest this guidance from HHS, what it says is that states can choose among those four options. And if you choose one of them, that is going to be the essential health benefits set for your state. Since one of those options in the small marketplace already has the mandates of Minnesota in it, could suffice and be sufficient to meet the essential health benefits set. Now, there's additional. If mandates are imposed higher and above what's in one of those options, we would have to take a look at what would be the cost of that. But at this point, I think in the access work group, really where it is at is simply to determine which of the plans meet those four options so that we all will know and can choose from them.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Rothman, I apologize. I am not being clear. Does Minnesota have higher cost of health care than Wisconsin? And if so, will we receive higher federal reimbursement, or will our reimbursement be the same as all the other states? I'm not concerned about the essential benefits set within the exchange, without the exchange, grandfathered plans, non-grandfathered plans, self-insured. I'm not concerned about the Minnesota healthcare box. I'm concerned about our healthcare box compared to the other states. And are we more expensive, and is the federal government going to reimburse us for doing above and beyond?
Commissioner Rothman.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, we have not done the comparison with other states. We've looked at our benefits set. And it's my understanding that the question as to, you know, once we pick an option for Minnesota, that the analysis of whether Wisconsin's plans do something different isn't part of the equation. So, but we would look at what our mandates, and we have looked at whether or not the mandates in Minnesota and the plans that meet and satisfy the four categories under the essential health benefits set guidance meet the requirements of the ACA, which includes 10 categories. We've done that analysis. We have a detailed chart. We're happy to give you that chart. But no, we have not done an analysis against Wisconsin.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner
Rothman. Sir, Benson, we'll give you one more shot. At
this is it. And after this, I'll just come to your office and see if I can make myself clear, because we're wasting a lot of people's time. The federal government's only giving us so much money. Are they going to give us more money in reimbursements and subsidies and tax benefits if we have more benefits in our insurance than other states? And if not, how are we going to make up that money? Because it's not falling out of the trees in Minnesota. So do we get more money from the federal government for having a higher essential benefit set or not?
Mr. Rothman?
Mr. Chair. We've looked at that analysis. We're seeking clarification, as I had indicated. It appears that if we choose one of the plans, like, for example, under the small market, and it meets their definition of the essential health benefit set, and because it meets and has all of the statutory mandates in Minnesota, that it would satisfy the federal government in terms of what they would do and what they would fund. And then we would look at, and if there's anything that we add on top of those, we'd have to look at what those costs are and what the federal government. But I do have to say we're at a preliminary stage in analyzing that. Happy to work with you as well.
I would appreciate that.
Yep.
No more questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Lurie, and then followed by Senator Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I was going to go to Senator Gerlach's governance, and I will get back to that, but just a brief response to Senator Benson's line of questioning, too. I mean, I think that that it is a very valid question, and we should be going in and looking at what our essential benefit set ought to be. But I think we ought to also recognize that this is one of the tools that we used to bring a very high-quality, low-cost health care system to the people of Minnesota, was through making sure that when they go out and buy a policy, it's going to cover the needs that one might reasonably expect to need to get covered. Not every state had done such a good job on that, and there was a lot of people nationwide that went out and bought policies that later on, when they got ill, discovered did not meet the needs that they might reasonably have expected to get paid for. And so it's one of the tools that we've actually used to make sure that we do have a high quality, low cost healthcare system for people of Minnesota. So I mean, we should take a look at them and make sure that they still make sense, but we can't lose sight of the fact that this was one of the real public policy levers that we did use to get to our advantageous place. But to the governance questions from Senator Gerlach, getting back to that, I did serve on the governance task force. I think that's actually one of the key things that we should be focusing on here, is making sure that this thing can work. And I think that one of the, you know, higher-level questions that's always posed is, you know, is it in the agency? Is it a quasi-governmental or is it a nonprofit? One of the things that we kept returning to was a, it's from the House, but sometimes they do good work, Mark Shepard memo, Laws Governing Executive Branch Agencies. And really, you know, the three categories are really just a name. And what it comes down to is, we have the authority in legislation to craft how almost anything works. We can take something that's called an agency and strip away the applicability of many of our, you know, data practices, open meetings. We can craft an agency minus some of the things. We can call it a quasi-governmental. We can add a whole host of similar statutes that apply to state agencies. We can take a nonprofit and similarly build it up with the whole contingent of state laws. So what the task force recommendation reflects is, rather than trying to talk about the name, get in and say, and in that Mark Shepard memo, he talks about several of our current kind of hybrids, the MCHA, your Minnesota Zoo out in your district, the Minnesota Business Finance, Enterprise Minnesota, Clearway Minnesota, all these hybrid models that have a different set of governing principles. And this is another unique function that the state certainly has some role in. One of the key issues is it has to be attached to the state enough to be able to make Medicaid eligibility determinations. And that is a function of the exchange, and so it's going to need a state link, at least to that extent. It has to be a public employee to make Medicaid. A public employee has to make Medicaid eligibility determination. So there's going to have to be a fairly clear link with state entities. But then beyond that, you know, we went through conflict of interest policy. You know, what we should do with the open meeting law, understanding that there's sensitive information involved. Data Practices Act, state procurement laws. This is going to need to be a flexible entity as well. We don't want to totally overburden it with all of the procedural requirements of a full-blown state entity. They're going to need to have some flexibility. We're going to be making changes over time to how this is done. None of this is a done deal. We're, as a state, going to be working through this for a long time to come, and whatever's overseeing it is going to need to have that flexibility. It also should have the ability to do intergovernmental transfers so that the administrative work for the Medicaid population that it will serve will be able to collect the federal monies for the administrative side. So I mean, rather than trying to attach a label to it, we tried to say these are the principles of state law that govern, you know, where something is done, and here's generally how it should look for an entity running a well-functioning health insurance exchange in Minnesota. So I'm just hoping to offer a little bit of insight into how those recommendations came about.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Nino, do you have a question?
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going back to a line of questioning with Senator Brown regarding creation of a state exchange versus not having one imposed on us. And that's, I believe, the entire purpose of the task force is to find something that we could get implemented as a Minnesota exchange as opposed to one that's imposed on us via the federal government. And Commissioner, you indicated that we've got some flexibility in there, although you weren't able to enumerate all of the various requirements. But my question is, what part of the exchange law or exchange regulations do we have the flexibility to not comply with?
Commissioner Rothman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nino, I can tell you that at the end of the day, there's really two or three considerations. There's some that we've talked about. Number one is that we should focus in Minnesota on what works best for Minnesota. I would agree with that. And how we fit that and integrate it into our healthcare system, it's unique among the nation and states because of the way we've set up our plans, our healthcare system, and all that. We want to maintain that leadership role. I do also believe that I think we have to make sure from the administration's perspective, and all of us are thinking about this, what does that look like in legislation? We're happy to work that out. I think it's unclear at this point. I'd be speculating precisely what provisions you would ask for or you're thinking about. If you ask me, is such and such compliant with federal law, we can take a look at that. But what we've done is, at a very high level, made sure that in the work group on the governance structure, they understood what sort of the conflicts of interest requirements are. Senator Lori did mention a very important one, which is the Medicaid eligibility. How does that interplay with the governance choices that you make? And, you know, we want to make sure that we have the operational infrastructure in place to meet all those requirements. I think that there's a lot of technical details that need to be looked at. I'm happy to work with you in terms of your thoughts in terms of what you think might not be in compliance, but I'd encourage all of us to think about how we can do this, to build it as, you know, from a high level in terms of what the task force is recommending, in terms of what's best for Minnesota, and then to try to achieve that in working on legislation. I'll continue to work with you on anything that you know you're thinking about in terms of what might not be in compliance with the federal law.
Senator Nino.
Mr. Chairman, let me restate the question. There are 811 requires in the law, and more to come, I think. But right now, if you were to count them one by one, there are 811 requirements. Can you identify any of those that we have the flexibility to not comply with?
Mr. Rothman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nino, I don't know to what 811 you're referring to. If I see that or if you want to show that to us, I'm happy to comment on them. But I don't know to what you're referring.
Thank you. And members, we are about at the close of our committee time here. One other question, Senator Nino?
One last question. I did see under adverse selection on the bottom of page 6, I believe it is, that one of the recommendations was to pursue a state-level risk adjustment model to take account of state-specific market characteristics and take advantage of state-specific opportunities. I guess I have a bifurcated question. First question is, what kind of state-specific opportunities might there be? But the second question is, the ACA requires those individualized risk adjustments. How do you do that?
Commissioner Rothman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nino, you do it very carefully. We have and it's my obligation and all of ours to bring in the experts to do this for us. Risk adjustment, the idea behind adverse selection, let me start from there. The fundamental principle is to make sure that unhealthy unhealthy individuals are not dumped into a pool so that the pool itself becomes unsustainable over time. What is meant by risk adjustment and adverse selection is to build in protection so that the exchange will be sustainable over time, so that both healthy and unhealthy individuals are within that pool and marketplace so that it's sustainable. Minnesota has a unique, among all states, marketplace. We have the individual marketplace, the small group marketplace, but we also have the assigned risk plan, MCHA, as everybody knows, with respect to the high-risk individuals. So that's what a lot of this is referring to, is to make sure that we seamlessly and very carefully look at whatever changes need to be implemented in order to accommodate a seamless transition to a marketplace that works under the exchange. We have those technical experts on staff. We also hired Gorman and Gruber and did that economic analysis I was referring to. They've looked at some of these considerations and how the marketplace would move or may move. You have to look at pricing. You have to look at the benefits. You have to look at what's happening in the marketplace and how we work all that self out. I can continue to talk about all this, but the idea then is once the marketplace is set up and you have these decisions and characteristics in place, there is a mechanism that can be used that's contemplated to do risk allocation so that in the event there is unhealthy risk happening in the marketplace, you can reallocate that risk and make sure that the marketplace is even out to try to ameliorate and mitigate against the adverse selection issues. But again, and I'm happy to continue the conversation. We can talk a lot about it, but we have a lot of experts that are looking at those very issues.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I do want to ask if you would provide a copy to the committee of the Gorman and Gruber analysis so that we'll make copies available to members of the committee. But heard about that, and some people have said they've been frustrated at getting access to that analysis, and so I would just like to make sure we have a copy to make available to people.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And then want to return very briefly before we adjourn to the point that we began our discussion today with respect to the legislation and whether legislation is needed. And I understand, I think, the position of the administration that there's some ambiguity about that. And I would just like to, from my perspective as a legislator and chairman of this committee, make my position on that crystal clear, that I think that nothing can be done on this issue without legislation. And I hope other legislators would share that view, but my reading of the Minnesota Constitution is that the legislature writes laws, and we've been talking today about a number of issues, adverse selection issues or governance issues or essential benefit set issues, and to say that those things can be resolved without going through a legislative process, I think, is not possible. And so I would just say that as difficult as it may be, that if it is the will of the people expressed through whatever way it is expressed, that we have an exchange, that has to be something that is submitted to the legislature in the form of bills that get adopted by votes of the legislature. And if we fail to do that, that does not then result in the default position of the governor writing the law. There's no provision under our Constitution to do it, and I can't believe and don't accept the view that the federal government can set aside the requirements of the Minnesota Constitution with respect to lawmaking. And so I just want to make it clear that we certainly desire to work with you and others in the administration on whatever bills might be forthcoming that address these issues. But we do not believe that it is possible to enact a structure that is as comprehensive and as complicated as some of the things that we've talked about today absent legislation, and that legislation must be written by the legislature and not by the governor. And I just want to make sure our position, or at least my position, is very clear on that. I guess we have one other question, and we'll let Senator Hayden make that, even though we're at the very end. But go ahead, sir.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it, and thank you for welcoming me to the committee. Being new to the committee and just trying to understand kind of the culture of this particular committee, though I've been on the healthcare committee in the House, I guess the question that I have that's kind of pressing in the elephant in the room, Mr. Chair, is do you plan to bring an exchange bill forward for this body to contemplate and to move forward? I think that is something that people have been asking me, and And I don't want to kind of dwell into the kind of rumors or why or who's or what's going on, but I think it is an important question. As in the minority, I think that there are opportunities and people talking about bringing a bill, but you, Mr. Chair, with the gavel, do you plan to bring a bill, an exchange bill, for us to contemplate?
Sir, our intention, or my intention, is to bring a bill that addresses specific issues that pertain to the availability, accessibility, portability of health insurance in the state of Minnesota. That is my understanding of generally what an exchange is supposed to accomplish, although it's not clear to me under the federal documents exactly what the clear intent of the exchange is. But I believe that is the functional goal that all this discussion is centered around. So it is my intention to bring legislation that would address those issues. Whether or not they conform to all the requirements that the federal law may or may not have, I'm not sure if I understand them all. I'm not sure if the commissioner understands them all. I'm not sure anybody understands them all. But I think that for purposes of our committee work, I think it's important that we work to identify what are the things that are impediments to people in this state from having access to affordable health care insurance. And to the extent that those impediments exist, we ought to try to resolve them. And mechanisms that are available to us, we ought to take advantage of and use. And so that is my intention. And we expect to have legislation introduced, I don't know precisely when, but shortly on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure. And Senator Higgins, you have a question.
So, Mr. Chair, even though you just gave that statement about how the legislature is supposed to enact this law, you don't have any plan to enact this law. Did I get that right?
Senator Higgins, the legislature has the power to enact whatever law that it believes it needs to enact to fulfill its obligations to the people of the state of Minnesota. And as I said, we recognize, I think all of us in this room and other parts of the legislature, that we do have concerns. And with respect to insurance and availability, accessibility, affordability, and so forth. And we want to address those concerns. But I think to take the perspective that we are going to pass a law that sole purpose is to try to conform to a federal requirement that is very unclear at this point and may be subject to dismissal at in the court cases, I think that is not prudent. And if the administration believes that it is, then hopefully they will bring a bill that will do that. But I think for our purposes, we should focus on what are the problems that need to be resolved, and we'll focus our energies on that.
Well, Mr. Chair, you've just talked all completely around in a circle in that. You've said that the governor can't bring a bill, and then you just said now the governor needs to bring a bill.
No,
you've
Senator
said
Higgins.
That the legislature needs to be the entity that passes this law, but you said you aren't going to hear a bill about it. So, you know.
Maybe, Senator Higgins, maybe I've been unclear. My statement was the governor should bring a bill to express the intentions of his task force and what they desire with respect to this issue. I have understood the commissioner say that they don't plan to bring a bill, but they plan to work with whoever does bring any legislation surrounding these topics. I think it would be helpful for the governor to bring a bill to say this is how we believe that this requirement or these issues ought to be addressed. I think that would be very helpful, and I welcome that. But I've heard today that there's not an intention to do that. So it's not at all my desire to say the governor can't do that. What I have heard expressed is that if the legislature does not agree on a bill, that it is the intention of the administration to act without legislation, to put into law apparently some very complex issues that I don't know how they would be resolved in the work of a task force or whatever, how they would be done and what force and effect they would have. I don't know how you can do that without legislation. That's my point. You need legislation. It may be difficult, but that's our job. And the governor's job is to, if he has views on that legislation, to bring that to us.
So, Mr. Chair, when we have bills that are introduced about exchanges and all of that, you will be hearing all of those?
Senator Higgins, I'm not going to make a
you
blanket.
You talked about yours. That you're gonna
Senator Higgins, I'm not going to make the statement that we will hear all bills brought to the committee, but we are very interested in hearing bills that pertain to these issues, and certainly we will welcome those as they appear. But we have not seen any yet. Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to extend my thanks for the Health Committee and your hospitality today. I know it was on short notice. I think for extending your invitation to the members of the Commerce Committee, any time that we can expose more legislators to all these issues surrounding this very complicated issue, I think is helpful. So I appreciate that invitation, and I certainly appreciate Commissioner Rothman.
Thank you. Thank you, members of the Commerce Committee, and thank you, Commissioner, for joining us today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.